Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Molly and Hall.
We're trying to wake Chicago up.
Live at 5 on 670 The Score.
And here they come.
It has been all about Zion Williamson in this college basketball season. He has been kind of the breakaway great player, and Duke has been very good with him and very mediocre without him. And I think that's what kind of scares me a little bit about Duke. I think they're a very worthy number one seed, and I think you take into account the fact that he's back, and that changes them, and it makes them a favorite in this tournament. If he was not back, first of all, I don't think they win the ACC tournament.
I don't either.
And certainly they're not the number one overall seed if he's sitting out this tournament, as people were advising him to do. But there's still flaws on that team that even the great Zion Williamson does not erase. They still struggle sometimes
with freshmen.
The three.
Cam Reddish.
That's right.
You know,
that's
RJ
right.
Barrett. They're
that's
freshmen.
Right.
They're great investments, but on any given Thursday or Friday, Saturday or Sunday, they could disappoint you. I don't think it's going to happen. I think Zion Williamson is going to be one of those guys that you look back at. This is going to be a historic run for him. Duke, to me, if he stays healthy, I'm not sure anybody's going to touch them.
Mike Mulligan and David Hall.
Your morning guy over there.
Mornings on The Score.
Kevin White said goodbye.
Kevin White did.
Yeah.
Instagram post.
Nice. It was a pity it didn't work out with him.
I suppose.
Kind of what he said.
It was unfortunate for everybody.
Right.
He was a bust.
I would agree.
Let's not get sentimental here, Mulligan.
Sure. Well,
okay.
No.
I mean, I know that's a problem for you.
Hold
on. Mully Hall.
I'm so fired up.
Here we go.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Another glorious, wonderful morning in the fine city of Chicago as we creep ever close to tomorrow, which is the first day of spring. Good morning, Mr.
Is that, okay, good morning, Mully. Is that what you're creeping toward?
This is what we're creeping.
First day of spring? How about tonight?
Slowly.
The first day of the NCAA tournament. The
How about
first
tonight?
Night?
Loyola in the NIT.
Okay.
Okay,
yeah.
Why don't you keep everything in perspective? Mr. National Guy, he doesn't care about the local teams.
I care about the local teams.
Yeah.
I care about...
And that's why you're trying to get our coach to Nebraska.
I am not trying to get your coach to Nebraska.
I saw what you said.
Go Ramblers! I didn't say anything.
Right.
I have tons of respect for your coach, Porter Moser.
Oh, you're trying to move him out.
Problem is, a lot of people in the college basketball world have respect for him, too.
It's not a problem. That's a good thing. It's not a problem.
He's paid. He's paid well. He's satisfied. He'll stay.
Thank you.
Right?
Why wouldn't he?
Okay. I mean,
guys like you are always trying to get rid of people.
I'm not trying to get rid of anybody.
You are. You're always looking for, we got to move him up. We got to get him a better job. Why can't the guy just exist in life, do what he wants to do, educate his children, live like a family man, and enjoy everything he has for himself?
When you do your job at a high level, very successfully, your people are going to want to employ you.
Okay. Just stop.
It's the business.
Stealing
it's
our
coaching.
Guys.
Stop sports.
Stealing them. No, it's not necessarily. I think it's completely the opposite. I think that you're ambitious. You work your way up. You get to a point where you understand that you've reached a pretty good spot, and then you build something, and you are a builder and a creator, and that is a wondrous and glorious thing. It doesn't mean you have
it's
to
very
go
satisfying. It's quality of life
else.
Issue, and we've
sure.
talked about that, and that's what we went through with Porter Moser last year,
right.
After the Loyola
and then,
pinnacle.
And then a year later, you're suddenly trying to move him out again.
I'm not trying to move him out. You're responding to the Nebraska rumor about Fred Hoiberg being mentioned as a candidate there. And
I just say this to that rumor?
Okay. But there's some history
there
that you can't ignore.
He'll
and it
go
makes
there.
A lot of sense. We could talk about
Perfect.
That later.
It's Iowa
but
State.
But in the context of that conversation, we were exchanging ideas, and I said that if Nebraska was interested in looking at a coach with Chicago ties to run their program, Creighton graduate, the guy who knows the state well, would probably be a smarter choice.
Remind me.
Porter Moser.
Creighton is in Nebraska, but it's not Nebraska,
okay.
Right? So because a guy played for a school in Nebraska, That means he wants to go to the rival state college. Is that
what you're saying? It means that he would have some connection to a state that often you see when guys make job changes.
You're reaching.
It was a conversation that is the natural extension of the Hoiberg discussion.
They're playing tonight, and you're trying to get rid of them.
I'm not.
And you proposed it last night, and I felt like Dustin. I'm being trolled. That's what I thought.
Well, there was a little of that in there, but I feel like this is a. I hope that he's coached for life at Loyola. All right,
that's better.
I hope that he is here forever College basketball is more interesting in Chicago with Porter Moser coaching at Loyola.
And they got a really good recruiting class coming in, and hopefully those guys can fit in and they, you know.
Actually, I couldn't take it if he left. I couldn't take the next day at work if he left.
Look at you.
I would dread it.
I would dread it more than you.
I know.
Because you'd be so happy about it.
I know.
Oh, he's moving up. I've got him a great job in the middle of nowhere.
You have misrepresented me.
You got to tear your children out of school and go live in Nebraska.
You know he's one of my favorite college basketball coaches.
That sounds like punishment, Mr. David.
Okay.
Frankly, it sounds like punishment.
All right.
But at least we talked about Loyola, so that's a nice thing you've done. The Bulls. I laughed. Did I laugh or did I chuckle? I like the idea of a chuckle. I found it amusing when Joe described their failure to improve their lottery odds.
Blown opportunity, I think you referred to it as.
That's exactly right. And they tried, right? Otto Porter Jr. has a sore shoulder.
There he has an air quotes rotator cuff problem.
When I heard that, I was like, yes, they're going for it. And then I unfortunately watched some of that game. And
you were waiting for Lauri Markkanen to come down with Valley Fever.
There was no way to lose that game.
And Zach Levine to have a cold.
Not when they shot 50%, what was it, 52% from the field. And
Robin Lopez is not messing around.
Rolo put that team on his back.
Yeah.
He said that that his teammates are trying to find him, and he feels like when they try to find him, he needs to deliver to justify that decision.
They jumped out to a big first quarter lead, and you knew after that they were not there to tank. They did not go to the desert.
No, tank is off.
To roll over Rolo.
Blackhawks had a loss, an overtime loss. That ends the five-game winning streak, but they did come back to force overtime. They took a 1-0 lead, went down 2-1, and then came back in the third period to force the overtime, and then immediately lost in overtime. I mean, it was, if you blinked, it was over 16 seconds.
Yeah, it was tough. You know, that was a game that was tough. Eric Gustafson scores a late goal to actually tie the game up. They took an early lead to watch that game. They missed an opportunity. That's the way they're going to look at this. Obviously, they get a point out of it.
They did gain, and they did step up.
They did.
They did improve their odds.
They got four. They're the four back now.
4 points behind the
Coyotes. With 10 to go.
Yes.
And they can control much of their own fate.
4 points between friends is nothing, isn't it?
It's nothing.
Not among friends.
But when you have an opportunity there to win a game that you had a lead in, you felt like you're at home against a team that's coming off a really back-to-back tough. They should have been tired, the Canucks.
They had come off in overtime.
Yeah. They played two overtime games in a row.
Yep.
So missed opportunity, but the Hawks still put themselves, they're in a position where it's going to be interesting down the stretch.
They host the Flyers on Thursday, and your guy, Patrick Kane, he got his 100-point season. That's just the second time he's done it, and he becomes the third player in franchise history with multiple 100-point seasons. Denny Savard, of course, and Jeremy Roenick. 100-point seasons.
That's 72 games, 100 points. That's more than I can do the math. That's more than a point-a-game player.
No, it's not. What are you, nuts?
Kane's having a great year.
Let me take my shoes and socks off.
His assist to Jonathan Toews.
Count this up.
When Kane and Toews on the ice together, boy, that's
fun.
Hawks are still fun to watch. They were a little frustrating last night in the second period.
That's 10, and then Toews make it 15.
We got it there.
Yeah. Right foot.
All right. Right skate.
Hold on. Yeah. The NCAA tournament, as you said, begins tonight. Are you a Fairleigh Dickinson fan, or are you a Prairie View A&M guy?
I'd have to check my bracket again to see who I picked in that one, because I don't know. Those are the
But you have Belmont over Temple.
Well, going with Belmont.
You have Belmont winning the Belmont, right?
I have Belmont 2/3 of the Triple Crown.
That's right. Yeah. There you go.
I would think they're winning two games in my bracket. I think I might have picked Fairleigh Dickinson. I'm fairly sure.
Very bizarre stuff with this analytics group. We're going to talk about this. The Sloan Sports Analytics Conference at MIT honored the Raiders with the Best Transaction Award because, of course, they got it done with the Khalil Mack trade.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
You saved the Bears' season and ruined yours.
Well, I mean, the thing they like is if you're going to stink, go ahead and stink. Don't half stink.
Right.
Stink it up.
Should you be rewarded
and
for that?
And they love draft picks.
Should they be rewarded for that? Get somebody fired.
We'll ask that question.
Yeah.
We'll ask that question, and we'll talk about it a little bit. I think that's a really fascinating thing to look at. Your guy, Brandon Morrow, threw off the mound for the first time.
Our guy.
I mean, he's my guy more than your guy.
He bonded with both of us.
No, I felt
more
like
with you.
I felt, yeah.
Yeah.
Tommy Hotovy seemed to like you more than me, which hurt my feelings.
I'll take him. Yeah. You can have Morrow.
But Morrow, he seemed like he was looking at me more.
He did.
Hotovy, who was a very nice guy and a very intelligent guy, you were just raving about him after that interview. And I just kind of nodded.
Did I go on a bit much?
The two of you were like really having this intense conversation. I said something, and he gave me a dirty look.
He did not.
Okay, maybe I made that up.
Okay, you made that up.
But I think it would be funny if he had.
It would be funny if he had. No, Tommy Hotovy.
Oh, he was great. He was really good.
Bright young pitching coach. Brandon Morrow, he was. It was morning there. It was early.
It was very early there.
He was tired.
So I'll take him. He's my guy. My guy on the mound, 20 fastballs he threw. And we'll get into it. Pedro Strop, whose guy is he? Dustin's guy? He also threw off the mound.
No shot.
Dustin doesn't like the hat.
But the only thing
Dustin doesn't like that his hat is sideways.
Bob Costas.
I tell you what, Dustin, that guy, you would strike out against him just because you'd be so like, what, is his hat going to fall off? Is it turned that way?
I'd have to walk out to the mound and adjust the brim.
He'd be the first guy.
Nick Shepkowski.
Oh no, he's going for the mound. he's just adjusted his hat.
I'll claim Stropy for this season because I drafted him in fantasy baseball yesterday.
Of course you would.
You did?
I'm going to need him. Yeah.
You drafted a Cubs relief pitcher.
I drafted him and C-Sheck. So whichever one ends up getting the job.
Was that for the show, Kevin? Was that just because you can talk?
No, but it helps. I have Eloy too.
All right. Well, but when you talk about the Cubs, now you can look at it in a positive light.
And Schwarbs,
like Eloy. Is it Aloy? Aloy.
It's Aloy.
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 He called him Eloy.
Oh. No, I said Aloy.
You can call him whatever you want.
What do you call
Rewind
him?
Rewind the tape.
No.
You've got 3 weeks to work on pronunciation before he's a major leaguer.
That's
anyway.
Great that you took him, Kevin.
You took Schwarber too, though?
He's not there yet. And you got Babe Schwarber?
That's right. Yeah.
Wow. Good. You're going with some power.
It's one strategy, yeah.
All right. All right, well, you know what? Let's get to the 5-5. If Kevin and Dustin are going to interrupt the talk anyway, we may as well get
Rodon,
in there.
Rodon, the name of the opening day
starter?
Didn't
I say that?
Yeah.
Carlos Rodon is the opening day starter?
But you kind of glossed over it. I thought that would be a bigger deal to a Sox
fan. Aren't we going to get into it? Yeah. I thought that's why I'm rushing to get to the 5-5.
Okay.
We have so much good stuff for you that you're not going to believe it, and there's going to be a lot of fireworks. I can feel the arguments already brewing over. We already got a guy trying to get rid of Porter Moser. It's getting ugly. And it's going to get uglier. That'll happen next. Mully and Haw on the Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
5-5 brought to you by Sport Clips. Cut the weight. Download the new Sport Clips haircut app and check in.
It's 5-5 with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top five sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. 5-5 with Mully and Haw starts now.
What do you make of the analytics that say Oakland trading Khalil Mack to the Chicago Bears was a great deal for the Raiders? Is it a move that the Bears will regret?
If it is a great move for the Raiders, and the analytics apparently say that because the Sloan Analytics Conference named that move the best transaction, they gave the Raiders the best transaction award, meaning that was the single best move by any team in any sport. And I got to tell you, here's the thing. The Bears will never regret it because the people who made that trade, they preserved their jobs. If the Bears hadn't made that trade and they had a bad year, and they were last again in the division. And that trade lifted the Bears up. It literally, they had a hole in their lineup. They had a real serious problem, and they got a future Hall of Famer, and they got a guy with a motor, and everybody fed off it, and it helped them become a great defense. You can't be a great defense without a great pass rusher, and he lifted them up. And in doing so, he preserved Ryan Pace's job. I would imagine Ted Phillips felt like this was the walls were closing in on him, and now he can breathe easy. That saved jobs. That move made the Bears the team that they were, and that, think about the buzz in the city and how happy everybody's been and how excited they are moving forward. I get it. You got to constantly have young players. You got to replenish. You got to get pieces, and it's going to be difficult come draft day to sit out, but I don't think anybody in Chicago is complaining about it, and I think it did preserve jobs. So if indeed it's the move of the year, the transaction of the year, it's a great move for both teams then, because it didn't seem like a great move for the Raiders at the time, and we'll see how the Raiders turn out. The problem with the trade is that the Bears got so much better that the draft pick's not as good as they thought it would be, and it won't be as good next year. So are the analytics taking that into account, the fact that the draft picks aren't quite as high as they imagined they'd be?
If they did, they never would have awarded this thing to the franchise.
I'd never give an award like that. But I do think that it did save jobs in Chicago, and I think it's a great move from that standpoint for the Bears. It made them the team they are right now, which is a contender. And it saved and preserved a lot of occupation.
The Raiders must have thought they had the wrong number when they called to give them this award. And like, are you kidding me? You're giving us an award for this? Oh, well, let's backtrack. Our head coach and football czar, John Gruden, vowed to our fans that Khalil Mack wasn't going to get away, that he was going to be back in a Raider uniform. Oh, but our management, our ownership group, Mark Davis, couldn't have the cash on hand to afford the contract to write the check to guarantee Khalil Mack the money to keep him in Oakland. So we decided to trade him we traded him to the Bears because we thought we'd get a high draft pick in return. Oops, bad idea.
It's hard to find a good one.
And you know how bad of an idea it was? Reggie McKenzie, the general manager at the time of the Raiders, lost his job. He lost his job. But let's give them an award anyway, because we're going to project that those draft picks that we don't know how they're going to be used by the Raiders are going to be better than anything the Bears are going to get out of Khalil Mack. Wrong. Wrong, wrong, wrong. You point out, you're right. This saved jobs. It's not only saved jobs in Chicago and at Hallis Hall, it revived careers.
Yep.
Ryan Pace looked at this job as a dead-end job for the first 3 years he was here. He trades for Khalil Mack. It changes the complexion of his career and his future. It rejuvenated a franchise. The human aspect of this is something you can't measure with analytics. That's the problem I have with awards like this, with numbers like this. This was a trade the Bears will look at as winning. No matter what happens with the draft, you can say, we won because of what it meant to the franchise at the time they made the trade. The Bears were going nowhere.
Yep.
They make the trade for Khalil Mack, and all of a sudden, everything about the franchise and direction changes.
I disagree strongly with it, but I understand from the Raiders' perspective. Now, first off, Daryl Morey was quoted as saying it's about process over results. It doesn't matter what the picks. Of course it matters what the picks are. That's how it's going to be judged forever out in Raiders land. But from the Raiders' perspective, do I understand it? Yes. They didn't have the money.
Right.
They're coming off a 6-10 season. They're begging John Gruden to come in. They land him. You say, it's your team. Gruden doesn't think they have a quarterback either. And they want to be good when they move to Vegas in 2020. So building around Khalil Mack, he didn't think that was going to happen. How do you do it? You do it by getting some capital, get him some first-round draft picks, and rebuilding the team. As far as the Bears go, they will not regret it. This put them in a championship window. And let's remember where we were before this Khalil Mack trade, after Trestman and Fox. In my life, I never saw so many Bears fans that were completely apathetic about. I mean, Sundays, I was looking forward to Red Zone much more than Bears games.
You want to see Matt Barkley?
And it completely
hucking the pill?
Yeah. Your guy Sanchez. It completely flipped.
David's guy.
Last
That's my
year.
Guy. Joe. Sanchez is my guy.
Elite leadership.
We can share. It's fine.
We share.
Be both of our guys.
You know what? He's a good enough leader with enough charisma. We can share him.
That's true.
No, the Jaguars. One of the few. The Jaguars quarterback is your guy, not David. Admit it. Come on. He's your guy.
All right.
He's a Lululemon guy.
I love Nick Foles.
He has the same Lululemon shirt he's worn for 10 years. He's now a spokesman for them.
You know, I'm always in favor of the Jaguars being relevant at all times. It's an amazing cast of characters down there. As far as this, you know, really interesting when I read this last night. And then I think that obviously on the surface we can dismiss it and we can say this is silly and this is where analytics fail and it's all BS and blah, blah, blah. But I think it can be possible for it to be a good trade for the Bears and for the Raiders as well. Look, the Raiders with Khalil Mack were what, 4-12?
Six.
The last year that they had him,
right? 6-10.
They had 6-10 with him, and then they they had 4-12 without him. So he was worth two wins to the Oakland Raiders. And if you're the Oakland Raiders, that two wins doesn't really mean a damn thing. You are trying to build this thing back up. You're trying to accumulate draft picks. You're trying to get your own draft pick to be as good as you can. And I think if the Bears don't at least make it to a Super Bowl with Khalil Mack on the roster, and then they look at the roster in a few years and they don't really have as many draft picks as they would have liked, you can kind of understand where the Sloan Sports Analytics Conference was coming from with this. And it's all dependent on what Oakland does with the picks. You know, that's probably the most important thing here that might be overlooked a little bit by whatever study this was or whoever came up with this award, because if all the picks suck, then it's going to be a terrible trade.
How do you give that award now?
Yeah.
That's exactly. Yeah.
And I do get that. But yeah,
Said it doesn't matter. That's...
Yeah, according to what they believe,
okay, so, you know, that's
you have to get worse.
Little disconnect.
You have to get worse in order to get better. So they like that they got worse, and they like that they have picks. To them, picks and worse is everything.
I think that as much as we like to laugh at John Gruden and the Raiders and the trade they made to get rid of Khalil Mack, it can be good for them potentially because they are stocked up on draft picks now. And in 2-3 years, they could be great, and it could be a win-win for both teams. But it's pretty hard to forecast that right now because the draft is so kooky.
I mean, I invite all lovers of analytics and people that swear by it. I mean, come on. This is absolute. This is hot garbage. I'd like to make sound effects and swear right now. This is absolutely ridiculous. The Bears were so far off the radar, first of all. They needed this guy, okay? Ryan Pace absolutely had to have this guy, and the Raiders bungled it because they had no cash. They couldn't afford to pay. They were going to lose him anyway, okay? And now, because the Bears got good, as you pointed out, Mully, these picks are way down at the other end of the first round. You're not going to get that type of guy with that pick. Now, you could say it allowed them to have the cash on hand to go out and get Antonio Brown if you want to bring. But you know where this group is smarter than we, and we already know this group is smart. The only reason we're talking about this conference is because of this.
Yes.
Okay? Otherwise, nobody give a rat's rear end about the MIT Sloan Conference out in Boston.
But that's a great point. They get credit for a transaction that they had to make.
Yeah, they had no choice.
They had no choice. They did not have the money. If you don't
have
the cash,
they backed themselves into a corner.
Exactly.
They mismanaged themselves into this kind of glory.
Right. And if they get better, part of it will be moving to Vegas and getting the money that comes with that. So they really did also let their fan base down by moving out a guy people might want to come and see. And instead, they have this absolute, you know, a football team on a stick,
well,
if you know
I
what
think
I'm saying.
Antonio Brown is more of a draw than Khalil Mack to an average fan.
Yeah, but you know what? Why they needed Antonio Brown? Because they got rid of Amari Cooper, too.
Right. Right.
Antonio Brown's 10 times the player.
I know,
as Amari
but if you keep Khalil Mack, if you keep Amari Cooper,
move that looks like
but now they'll have enough to make it look like they're okay when they get to Vegas.
That's a hard question to ask.
It's a pretty important question to answer, though.
Are you upset or disappointed that the Bulls won last night against the Suns?
I know I should be disappointed. I know I should be upset. I know I should be looking at, you know, the Bulls, and it lost an opportunity to move up on the Cavs, and there's only a couple games, and they have two more victories. All those things are true. But I'm not going to get too excited, and I vowed this a couple weeks ago. It's a 1.5% difference. And If the Bulls win because of Robin Lopez enjoying this odd career renaissance, and maybe maybe that's the wrong way to put it. Maybe he's always been like this, but he has really been scoring at a high clip since that overtime game, and he's been very dependable, and he's been a great example, and he's one of those guys easy to overlook. He had another big game last night.
Right.
Last night, though, was, we'll get into it, but the Jim Boylan end of the game, calling a timeout with up 14 with 40 seconds left to set up an out-of-bounds play, really ticked off Igor Kokoschkov of the Suns coach, so much that he didn't even do the post-game wave. So Jim Boylan doing what Jim Boylan does. Two out of the last three games, he's alienated the opposing coach. I don't know that I'm upset that they won. I think it's kind of they were on a losing streak. It's okay with me. You see some positive things. Yeah, I'm fine with it.
He's the only European-born head coach in the NBA, and he walks off without kissing Boylan on each cheek. It's just wrong. I just think it's wrong.
Who is this bold man? Disrespect me.
You're no longer invited to Turkish bath with me. I really...
That's an image.
Yeah, sorry. I am both upset and disappointed, but like you, David, I really can't bring myself to that level. When I saw Otto Porter Jr. on, I was like, go on! Yeah, here we go! And I was really excited that maybe they could continue to lose, but I wrap my mind around this idea that the Bulls were going to be a team that finishes fourth in the NBA failure standings. And that's what they're going to do. So it was just more like a glimpse of something. Hey, maybe they can pull this out. And I kind of was half amused by it. I wasn't really, I've wrapped my mind around fourth. So yeah, doesn't work me up, but it does amuse me.
The Bulls are such a tease. Otto Porter's out and you think they're going to lose and they just disappoint you by salvaging a game out on the West Coast. You had a chance for 1.5% for Zion. I'm very disappointed. Lauri Markkanen's on board. He had a great February, and he's been awful this month. He's
on
board
for
the tank.
I know. What's happened to him?
Shots way off.
He recognizes the tank.
I get 1.5%. Let's remember, 2008, they had a 1.7% chance at Derrick Rose, and they got the number one pick.
You think that was on the level?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
NBA.
Let's hope the league doesn't want the Knicks.
Or the Lakers, for that matter. Boy, the way they've been playing lately. I'm not upset about it, but I think, disappointed is the right word when I woke up this morning to find that the Bulls had won this game over the Phoenix Suns. See, this is kind of the problem with tanking, though, and in more of like the grand scheme of things. You can't tell your players to go out there and miss shots. You can't tell Robin Lopez to play like crap or for Zach to turn the ball over 10 times. Sometimes those things will happen just because of ups and downs and inconsistencies, but you can't actively tell your guys, okay, well, the Cavs lost earlier today, fellas, so we're going to go out there and we're going to play like crap and we're going to, try to get the best draft pick we can. You know, they are still professionals. They get paid too. Some of them very handsomely, I might add, and they do have pride as well. Nobody wants to go out there in front of 15, 20,000 people in a nationally televised game or a locally televised game. And nobody wants to go out there and suck and wants to lose. These guys want to win every game. Now, that's not going to happen because of the talent gap, but this is just kind of one of those things when you look at tanking from a fan standpoint, maybe you don't quite put all the pieces together. So I'm a little disappointed, but I'm not going to, rip my hair out over it. That would be a true crime.
All right, let me be the upset and ticked off one for the group.
No,
then.
You.
Come on. Did everybody not watch what just went down in Charlotte over the weekend? Did you guys see how good Zion Williamson is? He makes you want to jump off the couch. He makes you want to get into your car and drive down to the West Side and go see a Bulls game if you're not already inclined to do that. He makes you want to get his name and number put on the back of a T-shirt or a jersey. I don't need to see Robin Lopez score 24 points and play 26 minutes. How about 6 minutes? How about 6 minutes for Robin Lopez? And how about 32 for Felicio, who's making $36 million for some reason?
He couldn't play that many minutes.
He played 19 last night and scored 10 damn points. Get that guy in there more often. I mean, this is just silly.
He does suck. That's true.
Silly. I mean, come on. 26 minutes for Robin Lopez? Stop. I mean, why is Zach playing 33 minutes? Why would he play 33 minutes last night? Have Wayne Seldon play 33 minutes.
Where does the league ask yourself, Dustin, where does the league want that player? Does the league want that player in Phoenix? Does the league want that player? Who else is down there?
Cleveland?
No.
Maybe, New York?
Maybe New York.
Maybe New York. Hopefully Chicago.
You can't tell the players, well, Cleveland lost, we're changing our strategy. But couldn't John Paxson text Boylan and say, hey, let's do some minutes limits. Let's do some more maintenance on these guys?
Get
campaign
back.
Did you see Cleveland lost?
You know, the greatest conspiracy theory, Dustin, of all time is the frozen envelope. You remember that, don't you?
Of course.
1985, Patrick Ewing, David Stern reaches into the to all the envelopes and feels for the cold one. Did you ever hear that one? Yes. That was a great. It's the greatest conspiracy theory.
When I write
they
the
put
second
it on
book
frozen
that
ice.
Nobody will buy, it'll be about conspiracy
dry ice.
Theory.
And then he reaches down and finds the cold
and
one. And Patrick Ewing lights up.
Don't think the league doesn't have an idea, boy. Zion, Kevin Durant, and Kyrie Irving in New York. Wow.
Wow. Very tough question. Very, very hard.
Did the White Sox make the right call in naming Carlos Rodon their opening day starter? Was there any other way to go? And who is second in their rotation?
They named the only guy they could name. First of all, is he the highest draft pick on the team? You know, people forget how high he was drafted.
Was he higher than Madrigal?
He is higher than Madrigal, right? Isn't what? How high was he picked?
I'll do some research.
He was keep third talking. Or fourth? Something
I
like
want to say fourth, one pick before Schwarber, right?
Yeah, yeah. Your guy. Madrigal was like a...
Sure.
Wait, what was Madrigal? Was he third, too?
I want to say fifth. I'll double
whatever.
Check.
Madrigal was fourth.
Fourth, and fourth. Rodon was third.
Yeah, okay, there you go. So he's the highest pick on the thing. He's a homegrown talent. He's the guy that is supposed to be the veteran leader of the rotation when Kopech arrives, when Dylan Cease comes up. And that's the rotation of the future. And maybe someday Kopech can put together a number of consecutive opening day starts. It's more of an honorary position, let's be honest about it. It doesn't really affect where you are as the season goes on. The rotation gets a little bit messed up. But it is an honorary thing, and he is the young pitcher of the future that he's going to be the veteran with these guys when they come up. So, yes, and when you look at their rotation, you know, who's next? Is Ronaldo Lopez next? I think it's probably Ivan Nova. It's probably, it's not Lucas Giolito.
Where's your guy Giolito? Yeah.
No. I'm not even sure he's the fifth starter. I think when Dylan Cease comes up, he'll be ahead of Giolito on that list. Erwin Santana, he's not ready
Magic,
to go right
please.
Now. So I think that you're looking. Yeah, Benuelos. No, it is Rodon or bust. He is the only guy, and you want to make sure he's not a bust. And he really needs to get to 185, 190. You'd love to say 200, but that might be pushing it. He needs to be an innings eater, and he needs to be the guy at the top of the rotation that is the stopper and all the rest of it. He needs to be the best pitcher on that staff, and let's hope this is the beginning of a five-year run as opening day starter.
That's the idea. That's certainly the plan, and this was such a foregone conclusion that Rick Renteria didn't even tell Rodon before he told the media. He broke it to reporters, and then I think a couple people speculated on Twitter, well, Carlos Rodon will figure it out somehow. It didn't matter because everybody knew. Everybody knew. There was no other choice.
Right.
And that's with due respect to Ronaldo Lopez, who I think is your clear number two starter. He's got to be the guy going in is your number two starter because nobody else has achieved. I mean, you could go with Nova, but he's the new guy.
Right.
You wonder how the rest of the rotation will stack up. I think it probably goes like that. Rodon, Lopez, Nova.
Did they name Rodon, Giolito. David, just because Dunning, the information came out?
Well, you wonder about
yesterday.
That because, you know, Dane Dunning has Tommy John surgery like we talked about last week on the same day. You know, maybe it gives a positive headline, maybe some
because it's such a foregone
PR.
Conclusion, as you say.
It is a foregone conclusion.
It's not a surprise. The timing of it maybe is lined up with that.
Although maybe they're scouting James Shields, who threw 60 pitches yesterday, he's still out there. He could be your fifth starter if nobody else works out. But I think they want to find the fifth starter on their roster to kind of hold the spot until Dylan Cease is ready.
Yeah.
And then you bring up him whenever that may be. But to me, the two pitchers I am excited about this, well, I'll say three. I think Lopez can take a step. I think Rodon needs to continue the mastery we saw at times in the second half of last season. And Dylan Cease, when he gets on to the south side, every start he makes could be electric.
Yeah, I was wondering, what were they waiting for? Maybe it was because of the Dunning news, because there was not another option, and it was the right call. Big upgrade over last year's opening day starter in James Shields.
Take it easy.
Jesse Sanchez wrote that Reynaldo Lopez said that he was going to be starting the second game of the season against the Royals, so it looks like he might be the number two starter. We've had that conversation about Aloy, about if this rebuild can work if he isn't an all-star. If Rodon is not, if he can't stay healthy, if he's not a top-of-the-rotation guy, that's another guy. Can this rebuild work? We need to see a full season.
How many innings is realistic, Joe, from Rodon this year? Goal, as a goal.
180?
Yeah, that's realistic, yeah. Isn't it? That's not too much to ask.
But the Sox are one of the few teams, if you're rolling, they're going to let you go 7, 8, 9 innings.
I don't know how realistic that is. He's never been over 165.
But Right. Don't you have to expect that from your ace, Kevin?
You need 180. I mean, again, 200's the dream, but not for him.
Not anymore.
You know who
right.
threw 200 innings last year? James Shields. I'm just saying. Man was a workhorse. No surprise that Carlos Rodon is opening the season as the starter. He's still, even though last season, like you said, moments of excellence, he was way too erratic after that injury, and you would see some games where he was completely lost, and then other games where he would just mow guys down for 5-6 innings. There was really no middle ground for Rodon last season, and you know, you could talk about coming back from the injury and maybe, you know, his arm wasn't back up to full strength or whatever else you want to say, but this is now to the point we are 5 years removed from him being drafted very highly, like you guys said. And he does need to finally put it together at some point. Reynaldo Lopez will be the number two starter. That's cool, I guess. He was their best pitcher last year. There's another level for him, I'm sure. But it's just, until I see Rodon actually pitch a full season, it's going to be really hard for me to think that he's, you know, going to be the guy that you kind of build your rotation around. And I don't want to be skeptical about it, but his history kind of speaks for itself.
No, there was no other choice. And to Joe's point, they need him to be that guy. So let's anoint him. Let's give him that right. Let's give him that nod. I guess the way it works out, if they find a fifth starter, he could also open up the home game at 35th and Shields as well. So it's fine. But if you need a fifth starter, how about Tyler Chatwalk?
Interesting.
I think the only person that should answer those questions is him.
Brandon Morrow hit a milestone yesterday by pitching off the mound for the first time this spring. What, if anything, is the significance of that?
I think it is significant. I think it's significant because it means that his throwing program is advancing. And when we talked to him about it at camp, he was saying how, you know, anxious you are to get going, and you got to stay with the throwing program. And, you know, they're going to break camp, and he's still going to remain there for another 10 days to 2 weeks. And but this is the first time he's been throwing, but he hasn't been throwing off the mound. And this is the first time he's been on the mound. And it just means that he is advancing through his throwing program, and hopefully there won't be any issues that come out of it, and he will be ready a month into the season or whatever the timetable is. They have a timetable. They have a plan. They are following the plan, and it is moving along. And this is exactly on par with what he told us he was going to be doing. So I think it's a really good milestone.
He felt great. I think that's good. I will think it's more significant if he has no discomfort after the fact. That's always the case when these guys, you know, he only threw 20 pitches. But he did it, according to Mark Gonzalez, who watched him with a lot of ease, and he had some zip on his fastball. Delivery was familiar, and he repeated it. And those are all good signs. And I do trust Tommy Hotovy to work out any sort of the kinks. But I do still worry, if you're the Cubs, about whether or not you can depend on him. They say the first month of the season, given the fact that he, you know, and he said he'd rather miss the first month than the last three. Yep. And who wouldn't agree with that? I'm going to be very cautious with my optimism with Brandon Morrow. I don't know that he has put us in a position in Chicago to count on too much. So let's not count on too much, and let's be realistic about what you can and can't expect from him. 34 years old, he's got a lot of mileage. He can be very good and very consistent if he's healthy, but that's a big if.
Yeah, the bullpen news was pretty significant yesterday for the Cubs. So they're saying Morrow is on target and that he should return after a month. And there was also Pedro Strop. Oh, yeah, he's been throwing off the mound over the last couple of days, and he's still holding out hope that he's ready for opening day. So you get some positive news for your two best relievers out there. And I'm not hearing anything about Kimbrel. It sounds like this guy might start the season without a team.
Well, they don't have any money, Joe.
Well, I'm not talking about the Cubs. I'm just saying in general. And I'd hesitate to bring that guy in without a camp. Because last year, the guys that showed up at camp late, they really struggled the first couple of months.
All right. Well, if I'm going to be skeptical about Carlos Rodon, I got to keep the same energy here with Brandon Morrow, a guy who's been around much longer than Carlos Rodon and has been injured far more times than Carlos Rodon as well. And I'm not trying to be anti-Cub here, which is something that a lot of people throw at me unwarrantedly, might I add. But if Brandon Morrow makes, if he throws more than 40 innings this season, I will be absolutely shocked. This guy is going to be back and forth on the DL, off the DL all season. And when he is, if he is ever available and 100%, you're not going to be able to use him in back-to-backs. You're going to have to use kid gloves on him. You're going to have to baby him, even though he's like 35 years old. I am absolutely unfazed by him throwing off a mound. Congratulations.
And I'm closer to where you are than I think than the
How
other
can
side.
You not be? I mean, look at his, look at the history of this guy. And even last year when Theo brought him in, everybody said at the time, this is in hindsight, everybody said at the time, if he's healthy, it's a really great signing. And look, he was hurt last year. He's not going to start the season healthy this year. It's kind of one of those things. You just look at the guy's CV, and he's just been injured every single year. This is not new.
No, it's not. It's not breaking news, and that's why this Theo and Joe Maddon thing is a thing, in my opinion. I think there is a divide. They're really ticked at Maddon for doing what he did. They're blaming him for what happened to Morrow. I don't think we're going to the significance of it. I don't think we're going to see him until May 1st, the first week in May. I think he's going to need that time. If he's going to get left behind, they're going to have to build him up, and he will definitely be on some type of a innings limit, pitch limit, every other day limit, all that stuff. So unfortunately, they kind of got a used car that you can only drive to the supermarket. You really can't take it all the way down to Disneyland or anything like that.
You know, I'm glad you asked that question.
This segment brought to you by Northwestern Football. Join Coach Fitz in the Big Ten West Division and Holiday Bowl champions at Ryan Field this fall when they host Ohio State, Iowa, and more. Season tickets on sale now at NUSports.com. Will you watch any of the play-in games of the NCAA tournament tonight, and has your bracket changed in the past 12 hours?
My bracket has changed dramatically, if I may combine a couple of words that shouldn't be used together.
That's shocking to me. And that's not why that was included in this question at all.
And it's going to continue to change. I have not finalized my bracket, and I won't right up to kickoff. I really think it's interesting. This could be Fran Dunphy's last game as an NCAA head coach. With Temple, and they're playing Belmont, and I know you like Belmont in that game. I'm interested, too, in the Fairleigh Dickinson Prairie View A&M game. Prairie View A&M is one of the best three-point shooting teams in the country, so I think a lot of people like Fairleigh Dickinson. They're favored in that game, but if Prairie View is hitting their shots, then they're going to win that game. If they're not hitting their shots, obviously that's what happens when you talk about a three-shooting team. It just comes down to whether the ball falls, so it'll be very interesting for me, and the timing of these games is such that I will be able to watch one and parts of another, and then I will be watching the Ramblers and the NIT playing at Creighton, which is, of course, in Nebraska, and Porter went to Creighton. Let's not connect any more dots than
Nebraska
that.
Thinks highly of a Porter Moser. Let's just be honest about that.
Porter Moser.
Okay. So tonight, I will maybe take a glance at Belmont if it's on, what time it's on. I don't know that I feel the appointment television aspect of the play-in games yet. I don't know. I want there to be buzz surrounding this tournament. I think it'll probably create its own electricity with buzzer beaters on day one and day two like it usually does. Going in, though, it feels like there's so much attention on Duke and so much attention on Zion. This is Zion's tournament. I don't know what else there is to get terribly excited about. I think from a big picture standpoint, it could be a difficult you look at some of the matchups and they're not all that compelling. I don't want to it is the NCAA tournament. It is the greatest sporting event, I think, that we put together, and we'll look back and there'll be some terrific finishes and surprises. But going in, the anticipation, maybe I'm just reacting to the fact the last 2 years, this day, like the Monday and Tuesday, sure, building up to the first, you felt excitement because it was either Northwestern making history or Loyola, you know, capturing our imagination. There was something there locally to kind of draw our stare. And now it's like, okay, I'll try to make time. If I'm there, I'll watch it. But if not,
now it's just about gambling.
And brackets and the extra stuff.
Well, they messed up this whole schedule. First off, Temple Belmont should be first.
Yeah.
For our lives. I mean, what's wrong with that?
Exactly.
And I think I'm going to watch some of it, but it all depends if I can find True TV. If I'm able to find True TV by the time these games tip off, then I'll definitely watch some of it.
Is that the channel now? Impractical Jokers on there?
Yes.
Okay. Tenderloins?
I tweeted about it, and they tweeted at me with a video saying, how do you not know about True TV? Yes, my brackets change. I'm a complete mess. I've got brackets on the mind. Survivors, futures, squares, last man standing. I don't know where I'm going to stand by the time we get to Thursday.
I'll probably have the games on tonight, you know, kind of in the background as I'm just going about my life doing other things. But I'll be keeping one eye on them. And then by the time Thursday rolls around, yeah, I'll probably be on the third or fourth, fifth version of my bracket, and I'll be tuned in by then. But it's a little difficult for me to get juiced up about these play-in games personally. I'll take a look. I'll peruse. I won't avoid them like a hockey game or anything like that. But I'm not completely tuned in yet.
Come on. There's no hockey on tonight.
Good. Make it easier to avoid.
Hey, how about Thursday night? The Hawks play Thursday night when everything else is going on in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, we're not really going to get much.
Yeah, nobody's going to be watching that.
Dumb. That's just NHL dumbness right there. That's what that is. You know, it's not, you know, I had a look to see where exactly Fairleigh Dickinson was, right? Where you know,
Marcus
right?
Towns, old school.
Can you name mascot of Prairie View?
To name A&M? A player.
Is it a prairie? Is it a prairie dog? It doesn't excite. I am like Belmont Temple. Like, that's a good story. There's some good coaching angles there. I'd much rather that game be the early game. Same thing, right? Same thing tomorrow night. Arizona State, St. John's. Why does that have to be the late game? Why can't that be the early game? But of course I'm going to watch. There's nothing else on to watch, and of course I'm going to watch it. You need it just to get in the mode. It's like an appetizer to the main event. That's what this is. It's an appetizer to Thursday.
Dustin, isn't tonight This Is Us night?
I can't watch those shows. I have to DVR those.
Sensitive
shows.
Guy like yourself, I figured
to
be like
shows. I can't sit through the commercials anymore, so I have to DVR those so I can fast forward.
Well, he's an honest man. He's watches schmaltzy TV and fast forwards through the commercials.
Like 38 minutes.
That's good.
Yeah.
But yes, I am watching. There's nothing wrong with that. You got to have a couple shows you watch with your wife. I can't watch sports all the time.
Yeah.
And I don't read any of the books that Mully talks about.
Are you happy with This Is Us this season?
All right.
Having a good season.
I like A Million Little Things right now better than
Oh, really?
Is,
is that good? Oh, my wife wants me to start watching that.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Is it good?
See, guys, you're paying attention. Ray's soon to get married.
And there's a sports angle in
Kevin's
that
Kevin's angling that way. Let me tell you something.
Yeah.
This is what it's really about.
It's what it's about.
It's about whether you can get a break from the sports television to watch, whether you can stand a show or two that you have to watch in order to watch sports.
How many times are you looking at your phone during it?
This is the secret, Joe.
Like what? What's a better show? Watch a show, Kevin, to tell us that there is a better show?
I mean, in the history of television, yeah, I could probably rattle off like 75.
Then what?
But it's 6 o'clock and we got to get to this
break. History of television?
Okay. Well, here's what you do. You find the new app with NBC Sports Chicago. I think the My App, whatever it's called.
Mm.
You can get that on your phone. So I watch the Bulls and the Blackhawks on my phone while my wife is watching another show that I'm pretending to pay attention to.
Wow, he just revealed.
Well, not pretending.
Let's hope she sleeps.
There's two things going on at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, you can watch the show and you can watch the game and pay attention to the game. And then, like, I'll react to something like, oh my gosh, there was a Patrick Kane pass last week. Like, oh my gosh. And there's nothing happening in the show.
Do you use headphones?
Yeah. Well, because no, I have an earphone. One earbud and one ear.
That's the problem is when she's like, oh, my God, that's so moving. And you're like, what? Yeah, that was moving.
Why are you tearing up? Well, that's a great save.
312-644-6767. It's Molly and Haw, The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.